If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to Perplexity.
Hello, my name is Latif Al Maktoum. I was born on December 5, 1985. My father is the Prime Minister of UAE and the ruler of Dubai, Mohammed bin Rashid Saeed Al Maktoum. He has three daughters called Latifa. I'm the middle one. And I'm making this video because it could be the last video I make. Pretty soon, I'm going to be leaving somehow, and I'm not so sure of the outcome, but I'm 99% positive it will work. And if it doesn't, then this video can help me, because all my father cares about is his reputation. He will kill people to protect his own reputation. He only cares about himself and his ego. So this video could save my life. And if you are watching this video, it's not such a good thing. Either I'm dead or I'm in a very, very, very bad situation. So where do I begin?
This episode will contain disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. In 2018, a young woman, a member of the royal family, attempted to escape in fear for her own life. She also had a history of making prior escape attempts, all of which were unsuccessful. After her escape attempt in 2018, she disappeared entirely from public view. The public was in fear of the princess's safety. Was she alive? Was she being held captive somewhere? And what was going on with this royal family? In 2021, images began to resurface online of the princess. She appeared alive and well, but conspiracy theorists were not so sure. Today, we're discussing one of the most high-profile and mysterious cases involving a member of the royal family in recent years. This is the story of Princess Latifa of Dubai. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra, and if you're new to the show, welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, you are in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love it if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends. Welcome back. Super happy you're here. I have a wild, depressing, but very important story to talk with you guys about today. This is the season two finale, so we are doing a big case, and I'm very excited because I have some awesome friends here with me. You might be familiar with Amanda and Cassidy from Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm so happy y'all are back.
Oh, happy to be back.
Literally always happy to be here.
I love when I get to show up and somebody else tells me the story, you know? Ideal.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Cassidy and Amanda have been on separate times, so it's also really fun to just have us all together. I have a wild story for y'all today, and I'm curious, Cassidy and Amanda, if y'all are familiar with this story at all.
I have never heard this.
I have heard of it. I know a little bit. I'm sure I'm about to learn a whole lot more.
Cool. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I really didn't know about it. I do want to thank Samantha for requesting this story. It's crazy. It's kind of a little bit hard to follow just because there's a lot of people involved. So I'll try my best to explain who's who because this is a royal family. So there's a lot of different people and siblings and stuff that. Couple reminders for all of my listeners, and then we will jump right in. Just want to remind everybody that you can always get perplexing bonus content at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. I have lots of stuff going on over there. Just released at the time this drops a new episode of Texas Urban Legends. That's going to be all about Texas State University and some other haunted areas in San Marcos. I have lots of things always going on there. So if that interests you, go check it out. If you have not done so yet, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. Or if you're watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. It really means the world and is super helpful to me. I don't think I have any other announcements right now. Trigger warning though, this is a heavy episode. Listener discretion, all the sources will be in the show notes. And then throughout the episode, you will be hearing some audio of a relevant video with Princess Latifah talking about her experience.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So let's get into this story. Princess Latifah's full name, just for context, Princess Latifah bint Muhammad Al Maktoum. So this is the Al Maktoum family. She is the daughter of Sheikh Muhammad bin Rashid Al Maktoum. We're going to talk a lot about Sheikh Muhammad in a little while. And her mother is Huria Ahmed Al Mash, and she's Algerian. So we have Sheikh Muhammad, the dad. He is the ruler of Dubai, and he is still the ruler right now. Latifah's bio mom is Huria. Latifah was born on December 5th, 1985, and she is a Sheikha, a female member of the ruling Arab family. Latifah has tons of siblings. I think somewhere I read she has dozens of them, but we're just going to talk about a couple that pertain to the story. She has three full-blooded siblings, two sisters and a brother. This is Maytha, Shamsa, and Majid. So Majid's the brother. Maytha and Shamsa are the sisters. Latifah lived the first decade of her life not knowing that she had sisters, though. She only knew about her brother, Majid. She was growing up with her aunt. So instead of growing up with her birth family, she and her younger brother were given to their father's childless sister when they were babies, and they were told this was their mom.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. During this time in Latifah's life, she said it was horribly suffocating. She was raised alongside dozens of other kids. She was taken care of by governesses, which are like women paid to teach and care for children in the home. And she was abused by her aunt and by a lot of people in the home. She was seldom allowed to leave her room. She was forced to memorize the Quran, and her aunt, when she would rarely visit, was known to be very cruel. She would beat the children. So, from a very young age, Latifah dealt with abuse and she had grown up in lies. You know, she was told this was her mother, but she would find out later that was not the case.
That's just so confusing to me. If she's raised among all these other kids, right? And then the reason she was gifted to the aunt is because the aunt was childless. She clearly didn't want kids. And then she has dozens of other kids running around her house too with all these nannies, basically.
Right. Yeah, it's a very weird dynamic, and culturally it's very different too, because I didn't realize the wives of, at least of the royal family, they don't typically live with the husband. They're like in separate houses. The men are allowed to have multiple wives. So they'll live in various houses, have all these kids, and then the husband rarely will kind of come and visit. So it's already this weird dynamic. And I think the whole reason that she was given to the aunt was because she was childless. But then there's all these other children running around. It's not really clear if they're her kids or somebody else's, but I'm assuming they're not hers because they said childless. But yeah, it's weird.
The aunt is the one that's abusing her?
Yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't sound like she wants kids, so...
Yeah, I'm confused. Yeah. Latifa, from an early age, was very abused. She would have these dreams at night that she would fly a kite so large it would carry her away into the sky.
Oh.
She was very well educated. She did come from a royal family, so she went to all these various schools. Her English is very good, so when you listen to different interviews with her, some people have wondered why that is and why she has a minimal accent or whatever. That's why. She would have visits with her sisters, but she thought they were her cousins because that's what she was told. So remember, she has those two sisters, Shamsa and Maitha. So they would come visit. And when she was about 10 years old, she found out that these were actually her sisters because Shamsa basically, I don't know how Shamsa found this out, but showed up to the house and she's like, this is not okay. Latifa's our sister. She deserves to come live with us, and probably was suspecting that she was being treated cruelly. And so she was advocating for her sister because Shamsa's the oldest. And so she's like, she should live with us. So should Majid, the brother. So for whatever reason, they were like, okay, fine. And so then Latifa goes and lives with her biological mom, Shamsa and Maitha, these sisters that she's been really close with, but she didn't know they were her sisters.
God, how that'll fuck you up so bad anyway.
Yeah.
Just finding that out.
And she finds out when she goes to live with them that those are her sisters and that's her mom.
Well, she told the sister told her that when she came to be like,
oh, yeah,
you're my sister. You need to come live with us.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my understanding, is basically Shamsa showed up to the aunt's palace and is like, this is our sister. That's our brother. They should be with us. They need to come live with us. And that's how she found out. And from time to time, their father, Sheikh Mohammed, would visit. So that is who we are talking about next. So Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, he is a Emirati politician. He is the current ruler of Dubai. He's been the ruler since 2006. He's the vice president and prime minister of the UAE, United Arab Emirates. He's a billionaire, so he has a lot of wealth. He does get a lot of it from real estate as well. He's considered one of the most prominent people in the world. So I just say all of this to say he has a lot of resources. He's very powerful. He's very rich. And, you know, what do we always say about the rich? The lines between government assets in Dubai and the assets of this ruling family, the Al Maktoums, have also been very blurred, because land owned by Sheikh Mohammed is actually managed as an asset of the state. And he's also the reason that Dubai is this global powerhouse. They have all these major enterprises. He's basically a big reason why Dubai has become this big tourist city that all the influencers go to. They're bringing all this money in. It's a very wealthy city. The government here is also autocratic in an autocracy. It's basically a dictatorship. The autocrat holds all the power. So in the UAE, that person is Sheikh Mohammed. And he comes from the House of Maktoum. This is the ruling family of Dubai, one of the six ruling families of the UAE. And they have been running this shit since the 1800s. Sheikh Mohammed has a long history of ruling and being put in positions of leadership. He was actually the head of the police force when he was only 20 in Dubai. And when the new country of the UAE was founded in the 70s, he was the first minister of defense when he was just 22. So he's pretty much always been in positions of power.
Dang nepo babies.
Yes, exactly. He took over as ruler of Dubai January 4th, 2006, after the death of his brother, Maktoum. And there seems to be a very strong attempt, some might call it propaganda, for Sheikh Mohammed to portray a very shiny and progressive image. He has issued a lot of laws, creating establishments in the mid to late 2000s that claim to support gender equality. In 2006, he issued a law to form the Dubai Establishment for Women Development, and he formed the Gender Balance Council in 2015. He said that he was going to remove all the hurdles that women face. New laws guaranteed women equal pay for equal work. 9 female leaders were placed in cabinet positions. He called the women, quote, the soul and spirit of the country. He also claims to support human knowledge and science. He founded the Space Center in 2015, announcing that they would be launching a spacecraft to Mars for scientific research, and they would go on to do several missions. But he is a monarch, and many experts have dismissed these changes as being insufficient, pointing out, yeah, all these women are now in prominent positions of power, and that's great, but this is all window dressing because the women in Dubai are still expected to behave within very tight boundaries, unequal boundaries to men. And going outside of them means they're bringing shame on their families, and they could even be killed or tortured or held hostage in their own homes. Emirati women continue to live under male guardianship, unable to work or marry without permission. Men can marry multiple women and divorce their wives, but women have to get a court order to do the same. Men who murder women can still be pardoned by the victim's relatives, which allow honor killings to go unpunished. Because in many of these cases, the victim and the perpetrator are related. So this is really just to paint a picture of what the politics looks like here, because it's all really going to play into the story and just showing how powerful Sheikh Mohammed really is. He has also married many times, and he has dozens of children with various women.
How do you find the time? Oh my God.
No.
It's like Nick Cannon.
Seriously.
According to human rights organizations, there are a lot of systemic human rights violations in Dubai, including the torture and forced disappearance of various government critics. So, Cassidy, you would probably be gone if you lived here.
Between my gender, my personality, and just my inability to shut the fuck up.
And as for Sheikh Mohammed's daughters, including Princess Latifa, Dubai has been an open-air prison where disobedience has been brutally punished. So let's talk about some abuse allegations and early runaway attempts regarding Sheikh Mohammed's daughters. Latifa recalls witnessing her father punch Shamsa, the oldest sister, repeatedly in the head any time that she interrupted him. And as Shamsa grew up, she began to rebel and long for freedom. She had a shorter fuse than Latifa, and she was always more outspoken. So Latifa really looked up to her a lot because she was really the first woman in the family that was like, I'm not dealing with this shit, and started speaking up and rebelling.
Well, I was going to say, the fact that she even went over to the aunt's house and was, that's my sister and that's my brother, they're coming home with me. Like, I feel like that not only speaks to the type of person she is in personality, but just brave, you know,
exactly.
When you consider how dangerous it is to be a headstrong woman in that kind of situation.
Very strong, very brave woman. So Shamsa, basically all of this really comes to a head because her father, Sheikh Mohammed, refused to allow her to go to college. And she really wanted to get that freedom, get a proper education. So that really was the boiling point for her. So one day, while she was staying at her father's estate in the UK in June of 2000, Shamsa would run away, and she was only 18 years old. She asked her sister Latifa, who was 14 at the time, to come with her because they're very close. And Latifa is dealing with similar things that we will talk about. But Latifa, being more soft-spoken and not being as brave at the time, she was very afraid. And I mean, she's 14. That's very young. And also just being in a royal family, it's such a different life. So I would imagine that's really scary. Change is always scary, but coming out of that and, you know, not knowing what to do or where you're going to go, it's terrifying.
Yeah, escaping, if you have an abusive family, is hard to do when they don't have billions of dollars and people who can find you, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, they have a lot of resources. So she decided to stay behind, but this is a moment that is forever etched in Latifa's memory because she has always said, maybe the outcome would have been different if I would have gone with her. So the estate that Shamsa ran away from, it was, of course, monitored by CCTV cameras, and there's all these guards everywhere. But Shamsa, nevertheless, crept through the darkness, climbed into a black Range Rover that had been left unattended. She had no idea how to drive. I'm assuming she probably was not allowed to learn or didn't have to because she had drivers everywhere. But she managed to get in the car, drive away to the outer wall, and then she slipped through a gate on foot. And the abandoned car was discovered the next morning. Shamsa was gone for about 2 months. Then she was caught and forcibly returned to Dubai. When she was returned, it was very traumatic for her. She was allegedly abducted from the street in Cambridge, kicking and screaming. So Sheikh Mohammed basically sent these men to go get her, and they forced her into the car. And she had been getting help from UK authorities. She got contacts, basically, and was telling the UK what was going on, and they were helping her. But Sheikh Mohammed found her.
Yeah, that's the thing. Wouldn't it be illegal to kidnap her because they're in Cambridge, they're in a different country, they would have to be by their laws. But once again, if you're a multi-billionaire and you have private jets and all this kind of stuff, before anyone even knew she was gone, what could they even do?
Exactly. Yeah. This man, I mean, a lot of politicians, he seems to be above the law.
Yeah.
It's also really interesting. You know how normally when we hear about the royal family, there's a facade going on where they want everything to seem perfect. And it feels like he doesn't really give a shit that people know that he's a piece of shit and an abuser.
Right. And I mean, I did watch some interviews with him, and then there's been some reports of how he acted, at least on surface level, in front of his children. And it's, oh, he was really charismatic. That's always an adjective I hear, and I'm like, cult leader.
Yeah.
Like, he's very likable on surface level, and he's a man, and he's a rich man. He's just been able to get away with a lot of things. And he has all these other people in his pocket. Because he's, again, the reason that Dubai, or a big reason why Dubai makes so much money. So they get Shamsa, they bring her back, and the UK media, because remember, the UK had been helping her, they find out and they actually leak the story. But it really didn't matter because Cassidy was saying, this is a man who's above the law. So Shamsa loses any contact with the outside. And people really don't know at this time where Shamsa is, what's going on, if she's alive. So what would actually have happened during this time is she was put under heavy sedation and she was imprisoned in her own home.
Jeez Louise.
Yes.
Where's her mom?
Her mom is, I think, the same mom as Latifa, and she was living in that other house. We don't hear much about their biological mother, actually, now that I think about it. But I...
Not like she could do anything.
Right,
anyway,
I was
going
to say,
her,
I mean, she probably was super upset and worried, but also what can she do? Because she could literally be killed.
Yeah.
And it's not even like it's a traditional marriage where she might have some influence over her husband. She got pregnant and then bye, he comes over once a year to say what's up to the kids and fucks off again. So it's, you know, she really didn't have any power in the situation.
Right. According to Princess Latifa, her sister Shamsa became a, quote, shell of her former self, with all the willpower tortured out of her. She was given all these tranquilizers and other sedatives, along with a number of other psychiatric drugs. She was given all these antidepressants. And on at least three occasions, this is so sad, Shamsa tried to complete suicide, including trying to set fire to her cell.
Ugh.
So this is just to really paint a picture of how horrid the conditions are for these women. Like, if you are setting your cell on fire, I cannot imagine what these women had to go through. And at the time that I am recording this episode, over 20 years later, because Shamsa was imprisoned, what was that, 2000? Yeah, Princess Shamsa has not been seen publicly. She is allegedly still alive, but we have not seen her publicly. So that's a big part of this story, because Shamsa was the older sister that Latifa really looks up to. And she basically inspired Latifa to get out of this same situation.
This is like a Shelley Miscavige situation.
Yeah, yeah. There was a similar story in April 2000 where another kidnapping involving Emirati royals occurred. This victim was Sheikha Boutra bint Mohammed Al Maktoum. This is a Moroccan woman who was 27 years old. and married to Sheikh Maktoum. This is the brother. He was the one who was ruling before Sheikh Mohammed took over. So this is the wife of the previous ruler. But basically, when Sheikh Maktoum was still alive, he married her when he was 3 decades her senior. She was a teenager when they got married.
Classic, always.
Yeah. She had allegedly been locked up in a villa in Dubai in April 2000. She was a house prisoner. She was drugged with tranquilizers while the men of the family painted her as crazy. In 2007, the year after Boutra's husband died and Sheikh Mohammed took over as ruler, rumors began to spread that Boutra had died at the age of 34, with some people claiming she had died mysteriously in her sleep.
Mm.
So basically, Shamsa has been in prison and tortured, and now Latifa is basically seeing her aunt be tortured, and she was allegedly murdered. In June 2001, a serious crime was reported on Sheikh Mohammed's Long Cross estate, the current ruler of Dubai and Princess Latifa's father. A 20-year-old sex worker had been picked up by a chauffeur and driven to the property, where she had been held captive and repeatedly raped by a member of the Dubai royal family. Detective Chief Inspector Colin Sutton set out to investigate, but was then told the matter had been cleared up government to government. And he would later say his colleague told him not to worry about it. The alleged rapist's identity could not be confirmed, and so no charges were brought.
Oh my God.
3 chauffeurs that worked for the Dubai royal family for years were regularly sent out to Sheikh Mohammed's estate to pick up sex workers from across London and bring them back. So they would bring them there, and the drivers would say, yeah, Sheikh Mohammed was there, and he had this whole entourage of men with him. So this part was very much Jeffrey Epstein to me, because some of these girls were very young. They were estimated to be in their late teens, maybe. They never seemed to be older than their early 20s. And the women were never told where they were going. Their phones were taken away before they entered the house. And then the drivers that picked up these women and girls later on would take them back to London. One driver named Juro Sinabad was a chauffeur in the area until 2020. And he recounted a time when he picked up a girl from the residence, half clothed, she's all disheveled, and she had attempted to run away, run into the grounds because she was so scared. She was chased by a member of Sheikh Mohammed's staff and beaten with a stick. The girl cried the entire drive back to London and was clearly in a state of shock, according to the driver. Several other drivers would go on to tell similar stories.
It's just so crazy that you could just, if you have enough money, you don't have to abide by the laws.
Yeah.
Right.
And like everyone knows what's going on, but nobody can do anything about it.
No, that's what's so crazy about this.
And he's not even in his own country where he's in charge, right? That, okay, it doesn't make sense. It's evil and awful. But okay, yeah, that makes sense. You can get away with whatever you want if you're the ruler of this country. He's in England.
Yeah.
Doing these things.
I mean, that's true. Like, I didn't look a ton into, like, the laws, the regulations, and kind of the ins and outs in each of these investigations. But, like, you would think that some charges could be brought against this guy with all of these eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Former bodyguard who traveled often with Sheikh Mohammed also would recall groups of women being brought to his hotel room almost every night. And Sheikh Mohammed was often spotted with women and young girls, including some that, quote, carried dolls and teddy bears and traveled in their 90s. It became well known amongst the drivers that Sheikh Mohammed had all of these girls with him, was raping them, sexually assaulting them, and that they were all very clearly not consenting and underage. So that is the underbelly of Sheikh Mohammed.
He's still ruling.
Yes.
This country.
Yes. That's part of why I didn't say this at the beginning. I was actually really scared to cover this story, but these women went through so much, it's silly to not talk about it. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
it is very high profile. He is an active ruler in another country. He's very, very, very powerful and very dangerous, obviously. But this is all from the news, investigative journalism, and our opinions as well. But all of this leads us now to the story of Princess Latifa.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So Sheikha Latifa saw what her sister, her aunt Boutra, and all of these other women and young girls had been going through, and she knew it was only a matter of time before she would share the same fate. She would later say she considered her freedom worth dying for, and it would be the best or last thing she did, as she had never had the opportunity to know true freedom. And that part really resonated with me. I kept thinking about that quote over and over again. Okay, my freedom is worth dying for. My freedom is worth dying for. That's something that y'all talk about all the time.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't have a life, right? It's prison. It's torture. It's hell. Of course, getting away from that is something that, you know, seems to be the only option. And it seems she's going to be mysteriously sick in her sleep or whatever anyway. So might as well try.
Exactly. So, okay, in 2002... just a couple years after all this happens with these other women, Latifa was 16 years old. She made her first escape attempt. She was reportedly living under strict restrictions within her family. And of course, she wanted a life outside the confines of the royal family. She also hoped that when she got away, she could find a lawyer to help her sister, Shamsa. And basically, my understanding is in these palaces, it's not, I mean, as far as I know, when Britney Spears was trapped in her home, it's not like she was actually in a cell, but she was trapped in her home and controlled. But these women were literally in jail cells and barred windows and barred rooms. They would lock the doors and things like that. Or sometimes they were like in these little cells in the house. She was under heavy surveillance. She was never allowed to leave the city of Dubai without permission. And some sources claim she was facing pressure regarding an arranged marriage. So similar to Shamsa, she kind of has this boiling point that kicks everything off for her. So one night, she takes a pair of scissors, she cropped her long hair to the scalp, an act of rebellion, and she packed a bag with cash, water, wire cutters, and a knuckle knife. She snuck out of her mother's house, so she's still living with her mother at this point, and she would later say this was the first time she had ever been outside alone in her entire life. She's 16.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This attempt was unsuccessful. I don't know much about this specific attempt, but we do know that she was caught pretty quickly. She was tranquilized. She was captured at the Emirati-Omani border and taken to a police station, where she was met by a man who worked for her father, of course. This man took her back home and beat her for several hours as her mother watched. Later writing, quote, she was dressed up with a face full of makeup and frosty lilac lipstick as if she was expecting my father to visit. She was then taken to a desert prison. So they also have these other little kind of isolated prisons they can take them to. She was taken to this isolated desert prison. She was tortured and jailed, and she stayed there for 3 years and 4 months.
Oh my God.
At 16.
At 16. So she would have gotten out when she was 19 or 20. And during this time, she demanded to see her sister Shamsa, but her requests were always denied. And she would deal with years of abuse, torture, and she was also, for a lot of this, kept in solitary confinement. And we know what that does to people.
Yeah.
The pain didn't register because I think I was in so much shock, and it was a long day with a little sleep, and I didn't feel the pain, and it was a half hour torture session. And then the next times I was tortured, it was for 5 hours. And yeah, I was just pulled from the bed, driven to another location in the palace, in the same building, the khema, the tent, which is not a tent. And yeah, they tortured me. I knew how long it was because I had a watch. They told me that your father told us to beat you until we kill you. That's his orders, your father's orders. Your father, the ruler of Dubai, that's what he said. So all of this public image that he's trying to portray, human rights, bullshit. He's the most evil person I've ever met in my life. He's pure evil. There's nothing good in him. He's responsible for so many people's deaths and ruining so many people's lives.
I need to stop complaining about any little stupid thing in my life.
That's how I felt after I did this story.
Oh my God.
This is the wealthiest family, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just, it's just so insane to imagine. They just have so many resources to make your life even so much worse, you know? It's just crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. So she's in prison all this time. She gets out in October 2005, just before her 20th birthday. And just before, her father became Dubai's official ruler, because he became ruler in 2006. Her sister Shamsa came home in 2008, but she would continue to be tortured and on house arrest. But she did have this short time with her. Their reunion in 2008, according to Latifa, was incredibly emotional. And this is when Latifa decided she would make one last attempt to escape. She saw this as her way to not only save herself, but also save her sister. Because basically at this point, she's like, the only way I can help other people is to help myself. I have to get out of here and tell other officials in other countries what's going on. So she devised a plan for many years to flee her father. According to the New Yorker, quote, Latifa had kept her plan secret for years as she laid the groundwork, training in extreme sports, obtaining a fake passport, and smuggling cash to a network of conspirators, end quote. She also had the help of a longtime friend, Tina Jahyainen. I'm so sorry if I said that wrong. There is a picture of Tina in the pictures I sent y'all. She's the really pretty blonde woman in the pictures with Latifa. I tried to crop them to where you can read the captions underneath to know what's what, but they're sitting in the car together.
Oh, yes, I see them.
Latifa and Tina were very close friends. They met in 2010 when Tina was working at a martial arts school in Dubai. The two became friends. At first, Tina thought that Latifa's life, of course, was perfect and full of privilege because she's this princess. But she started taking notice that Latifa was really entranced by the seemingly mundane details of Tina's life. She wanted to hear all the little things she was doing. Eventually, Tina quit her day job and she worked full-time training Latifa. They start going on all these adventures together. Latifa's such a badass. She would go skydiving with Tina, scuba diving, wingsuit flying. They tumble out of hot air balloons. It's just crazy.
She was literally training to be a spy. She's doing the Tom Cruise special, man. What?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame her considering how powerful these people are too, you know?
Yeah, not at all.
But Tina would soon learn of Latifa's real life behind the curtain. And so one day Latifa basically confides in her and tells her about these things that are going on. And Tina agrees that she's going to help Latifa escape no matter the cost. So this is a very good friend.
A very brave person also.
Yeah. Latifa also had their transportation figured out. She's been, you know, planning this for years. She had hired a yachtsman to take them to India or Sri Lanka. And from there, she hoped she could claim asylum. So the plan initially was for Shamsa to come with Latifa, her sister. But Shamsa had attempted to run away again in 2017. Was caught, and she was separated again from her sister Latifa. Her sedatives were increased, and this is basically when Latifa realized, I can't take my sister with me. The only way to do this is to save myself, then save her.
Yeah.
But she's been planning this all this time. We're jumping way forward now to 2017.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tina and Latifa get all this equipment together. Scuba equipment, satellite communicators, a video recorder, and various boat parts. And just before her second escape attempt, she would record what is now a very viral 45-minute video to be released if she was captured. There's a 40-minute version of it on YouTube. If you guys have the time, I highly recommend you watch it. It's in the show notes. I did watch it. But she basically sits down and does this little vlog where it's like, in the event that I'm captured, I am probably dead. And here's everything that's been going on in my family. So she spills and then she gives it to all these different media teams so that if she gets taken, then she has these people that will then contact the media and leak this video. She would call her father in this video a major criminal who had tortured and imprisoned numerous women. She described her sister, Princess Shamsa, and her imprisonment. and how she continued to suffer in captivity. She also talked about her aunt, the one who had been killed for disobedience. That was what she said. Her aunt Boutra, the one that was married to the other royal. She would accuse her father of saying that her behavior was too outrageous and that he felt threatened by her. She would say this is the reason that her aunt Boutra was killed. Her aunt Boutra was killed at the hands of her father, Sheikh Mohammed, because her behavior was outrageous. He felt threatened by her, which was weird to me because I don't think he was a royal, or he was a royal, but he wasn't the ruler yet. But
yeah, so the aunt died mysteriously before her husband died, because her husband died. That's why he became sheikh, right?
So she was killed in April 2000. And that's before he became ruler. He became ruler in 2006.
Yeah, that's when her husband was ruler. So maybe she's just saying, you know, this is just what the men do kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I would assume.
I guess, yeah, that would make more sense, but
they were brothers. They're probably both involved together.
And basically, Latifa would allege Boutra, the aunt, was beaten to death by her father's guards. So maybe these are the same men that worked for the brother, Boutra's husband. Her account was also supported by two sources close to the family. So after recording her video, she and Tina packed up and they took a car out of town. They then took a pair of jet skis to the Arabian Sea, where they met a team under the American French citizen and former French intelligence officer, Hervé Jaubert, on their yacht, the Nostromo. So this is the guy that is going to help Latifa escape. Basically, the way this all happened, Latifa has been corresponding with Hervé at this point for the past 7 years. She has sent him hundreds of thousands of dollars, saving funds from pocket money, evading her chaperones on shopping trips, and passing bundles of cash to Hervé's envoys because she was not allowed to have a bank account. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. All the money in the world can't even have a bank account.
Yeah. The lengths this woman went to. It's so wow.
She's obviously also incredibly smart. I wouldn't even know where to begin with any of this.
No. Yeah. She's very well educated. I did kind of wonder through all of her schooling if she was looking up the stuff on computers, what was she doing, and having to sneak into different rooms to talk on the phone, and it's just wild to me. But her and Tina do make it to the yacht. Aboard the yacht, Tina and Latifa celebrated and enjoyed their freedom. Latifa wrote a triumphant farewell to her mother and siblings and posted a message on her Instagram. Declaring her freedom, she said, "I have escaped the UAE after being trapped for 18 years, which was, I don't know. That was hard for me to wrap my head around because I get it, but at the same time, I wouldn't post it. You know what I mean? I was surprised she put that on Instagram.
I mean, I feel like at this point, she's still probably like, there's a chance that she could be captured. There's a chance that she could be killed. Why not tell everybody as much as she possibly can at this point?
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. But Latifa and Tina began to lose faith in their captain, Hervé Jaubert, the longer they were on the boat. The boat was in horrible condition. It was riddled with cockroaches, and they were living off of nothing more than porridge, boiled potatoes, and beans. Latifa said the captain's mind seemed to be only on money and profit. Hervé had contacted a lawyer in Florida and asked her to draw up a settlement agreement demanding $3 million from Sheikh Mohammed on Latifa's behalf. So it's not a ransom. It's on Latifa's behalf, basically demanding this money, I guess. This part was confusing to me.
Ah, you gotta love a ransom loophole. And also, why would he do that? Why would why would he give them money unless literally they were like, we're going to return her?
Yeah, so that's true.
Clearly, it's not on her behalf. You are a creep. This guy's a creep, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it rubbed me the wrong way, too. His whole thing was like, well, Latifa doesn't have a bank account, so the money should be transferred directly to his account in the Philippines. And then he promised he would split the money evenly with Latifah and Tina. But I'm like, do you know who you're dealing with?
And also, why would he want to give that Latifah and Tina money?
Exactly.
Why would he ever do that?
Yeah, that's the part that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But apparently, Princess Latifah, I don't know the source for this, who said what, but Latifah allegedly knew about the plan. She went along with it to appease Hervé because he was helping them. But she knew her father would never agree to these conditions.
Yeah.
Hervé was also running low on fuel on the boat. Y'all spent 7 years planning this. How do you not have enough fuel? I'm confused.
And she sent this guy hundreds of thousands of dollars. His boat should have been fucking spick and span and filled with the fuel.
Yeah. I have a bad feeling about this guy.
Yeah.
He said that he did not have enough fuel to get to their destination. But this didn't seem to be the case. They get a week into their voyage. And they're getting close. Like, if they were running on fumes, they were very close. They were just 30 miles from the coast of India when Hervé would notice another ship that seemed to be following them, as well as a small plane circling them overhead. So Latifah's immediately like, oh my God, this is it. They found me. And Hervé is like, they're gonna kill her if they find her. So Hervé apparently sent a text to his friend. It was March 3rd, and he was like, they will kill her. That's the only text message they showed. A day goes by, nothing happens. But Latifah was like, it's only a matter of time. Basically, as soon as they saw the ship and the plane, she was like, it's over for me. So later that next day in the evening, around 10 p.m., Latifah and Tina were brushing their teeth in the cramped bathroom of their cabin. After finishing up, they heard the quiet sound of waves, but that sound was soon replaced with a series of loud explosions coming from outside. Then they heard the sound of boots pounding on the upper deck. So Tina and Latifah took cover in the bathroom, and they sent a series of SOS messages. So they start texting these people, we've been caught, help. But of course, they're on a ship. They can't escape. They're in open water with people working for one of the most powerful men in the world. So soon the women were struggling to breathe as smoke began to pour through the air vents. Latifah, through tears, whispered sorry and hugged Tina. They slowly emerged from the cabin bathroom and were met by assault rifles in their faces. And masked men forced the women to the upper deck, where the captain and his crew were lying down, tied up. They had clearly been beaten, including Hervé, and the floor was covered in blood. So Latifah is thrown down. She's tied up, but of course she's a fighter, so she's fighting the entire way down. And the men eventually dragged her away as she screamed, shoot me here, don't take me back.
Well, and that's all I can think. That's Tina is obviously so incredibly brave, because very little to gain besides helping her friend and literally her entire life to lose. And then the princess, she just is like, literally the reason I did this is because I'd rather be dead than stuck there still. And it's just heartbreaking that it feels like they got so close.
Yes. And that's what's so sad. Just the fact that she's like, just kill me. Anything. Yeah. Like, death is better than the life that I have going back.
Yeah.
So she was then taken onto an Indian naval boat and eventually transported back home. Notice I said Indian naval boat. So, you know, they were supposed to go to India to get asylum. Why is an Indian naval boat coming out and capturing her? Right.
Yeah.
I had a weird feeling that he had control of more places.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that more in a second. But basically, she was transported back home at this point, and she would later say about this, I want them to be embarrassed that it took it took the Navy, several warships, armed commanders, three tranquilizer injections, and an hour-long struggle to put an unarmed pint-sized woman on a jet. According to USA Today, the FBI became involved in the investigation to locate Princess Latifah.
Really?
Yes, the FBI. They had been, quote, responding to an urgent plea from the powerful Dubai leader's office, and they provided assistance essential to Latifah's capture. The article went on to say, USA Today's sources said that they believe the FBI was misled about her circumstances aboard the yacht. Basically, the FBI was trying to claim, well, we were told the princess was kidnapped. We were just trying to help.
Look at her Instagram. FBI, you can't look at her Instagram post?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the FBI declined to comment when they were asked by USA Today when they did this whole investigation and the whole article. They declined to comment for it. Then Latifa was taken to a prison in the desert. But at this point, the video testimony that she had previously recorded was released to YouTube. And it goes viral. Everybody's like, where's the princess? What's going on? And they hear all the horrible things that have been going on. So the news of her capture quickly spreads. And this caused an increasing pressure in Dubai and among the royal family to quell concerns about Latifa's safety. So then she was conveniently moved from this desert prison to a fancy villa, but she was still surrounded with cameras, barred windows, and police. This goes on for 6 months. During this time, Latifa staged a 20-day hunger strike. She's basically trying anything she can to convince these people to let her go, but nobody's listening. And then she tried to get word out about the severity of her situation, but there would be no response. So finally, Princess Haya, Sheikh Mohammed's youngest wife, because remember he has many wives, comes into the scene. So Princess Haya is in, I think, two of the pictures I sent y'all. She's wearing a fancy hat in one of them, but she's the woman that's standing next to Sheikh Mohammed in both of the pictures.
Oh, okay. I was wondering that.
And I've just got to say, Sheikh Mohammed looks like Grumpy Cat.
Yeah, he does. He looks like a Disney villain.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially with his big, tall top hat.
I was wondering who that was because you have pictures of her at a couple different ages.
Yes.
And so I was like, why is she standing next to him all fancy? Okay, it's a different person.
Yeah, all of the pictures of the young girl, the teenager, that's all Latifa. And then the one with the woman standing next to Muhammad, I think there's two of them. That's one of the wives, Princess Haya. Princess Haya basically shows up to the villa one day that Latifa's staying at, and she introduces Latifa to Mary Robinson, the former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and the ex-president of Ireland. Without telling Latifa, Princess Haya had invited Robinson to assess Latifa's condition. Haya actually was a former UN Goodwill ambassador, so she had connections. Soon after, the Emirati government sent photographs of Latifa to the UN, showing that Latifa was dazed. She was pale in dark clothing. They cited this, though, as proof that Latifa was receiving necessary care and support. Haya basically used Latifa, sent this woman in, and then they leak these photos to just show, like, she's alive and well. People who have seen these photos are like, she looks awful.
Well, it feels like they used the condition that they put her in to be like, see, she needs help and we're trying to help her. But if she only needs help because of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Robinson would also say that Latifa was a vulnerable and troubled woman who made a video that she now regretted. Years later, Robinson claims that she said all of this to the media after she had been horribly tricked into believing by Latifa's family that Latifa was basically just crazy. She's mentally ill. She has bipolar disorder. Princess Haya had just done this to appease her husband and orchestrated this whole thing.
Yeah. What a bitch.
Yeah. Not cool. So next, Latifa tried to get a message out by having a cell phone smuggled into the villa because she wasn't even allowed to have a cell phone. This was with the help of campaigners led by a really cool dude named David Ha. He was the founder of Detained International, and he is a human rights lawyer. Latifa locked herself in the bathroom after she smuggles the cell phone with water running to obscure her voice. And she is exchanging thousands of WhatsApp messages and dozens of voice notes documenting her whole situation and then sending it to this campaign. She also recorded a series of videos, and Latifa began to steer the campaign to free her from behind the scenes.
Do we know where Tina is at this point?
Yeah, she did interviews the next year. She was helping with the campaign for her freedom.
Well, that makes me happy. I was like, oh, this, yeah. She's goner for sure.
I know. Yeah. I mean, she probably would have been if it wasn't for what happened with the media and that video leaking.
Yeah, the video thing was genius. Once again, she's very smart.
Yes. Very resourceful.
Also, what the fuck is Shake's deal? Why is he going through all of these fucking lengths to make sure that she is being captured and tortured all the time? Let her fucking go. Why do you care?
Because it's control.
Literally just because of the power?
It's control. Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing with abusers, is their worst nightmare is that sense of control, the thing they abuse or the person they abuse being gone and being out of their control, right? So
get a fucking life, dude. What the fuck?
Well, and then right. add on top of that, he's in charge of this country that doesn't value women to have their own voice and power and whatever to begin with. So imagine how embarrassing for him if his own daughter, he can't keep control of his own daughter. You can't keep control of your own women. That's a bad look for him in his eyes. You know what I mean? Because at this point, you're right. You're like, why didn't they kill her? She's such a thorn in their side. And clearly they could get away with it. I really think he's enjoying the power of keeping her. And probably he enjoys the process of trying to make her look crazy on the world stage instead of.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why the fuck? Like, you're literally like, you're using boats and planes and all these fucking people. And it's your own daughter. It's just, it's fucking ridiculous.
It's so wild. Yeah. She is in this villa prison, and her father would continue to paint Latifah's return to Dubai as a rescue mission. He denied having ever abducted, abusing, or kidnapping any of his daughters. And his guards would offer to take Latifah out on shopping trips, and she did want the fresh air and sunlight, but she refused because she knew this was all a publicity stunt to show the world that she was fine.
Yeah, how could she be a hostage? She just dropped $150,000 at the Gucci store. How, she couldn't be a hostage. Yeah, it's so fucking classic abuser mentality. It's just so, it's textbook.
Yeah.
I mean, at that rate, I would definitely spend every single fucking dime.
Doesn't hurt
that motherfucker's money.
That motherfucker could lose $10 billion and not even blink. It wouldn't even matter. You couldn't spend enough money to even impact him in the least. That's the problem.
Ugh. Yeah, it seems like he really doesn't care about the money, unfortunately. Anything to get under this guy's skin, it's really when you defy his authority, it seems like.
She probably pissed him off more not going on the shopping trips than if she would have gone and spent $10 billion, you know?
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so in 2020, Sheikh Mohammed opened the Global Women's Forum in Dubai, promising his nation would lead the world in women's growth and advancement. And 3,000 participants from more than 80 countries came together to hear various female speakers, including Ivanka Trump, who praised Sheikh Mohammed and his steadfast commitment to women's advancement.
I remember this when this happened. Yes. Well, I mean, it was in the news. It was a big deal.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yeah.
The government had rolled out a new law enabling women to obtain restraining orders against domestic abusers. Meanwhile, it stopped short of criminalizing marital rape and preserved male guardians' rights to discipline their female counterparts. So legal proceedings are some things we're going to get into next. So basically, because of all these allegations in the media, with what happened to Latifah, what happens to Shamsa, a trial was now going to be underway, but it was a civil one, not a criminal one, of course. This was in London's High Court. Tina testified during closed hearings about Latifah's violent abduction. A police inspector also described how his investigation into Princess Shamsa was steamrolled. In March, the court would publish a detailed finding that Sheikh Mohammed had used his power to kidnap and imprison both of his daughters and subjected Princess Haya to a campaign of fear and intimidation. So they're basically throwing all of the things with the royal family, the daughters, the women, they're throwing all of that at him. But it's a civil case. But this did not satisfy Latifah, as it should not. She had suffered from all this abuse, all this shit. She never had true freedom. She was skeptical this was the end. She would say this was a perpetual nightmare. It's like, I'm always going to be tracked this way. Things are never going to end for me. More needs to happen legally for this to get anywhere. And sure enough, while the civil campaign is going on, Princess Latifah's communications with her campaign through the WhatsApp go silent. So they're hearing all these things from her, all these messages, and then all of a sudden they're not hearing anything from Princess Latifah. And this was July 2020. Her final message was read as, "I won't believe I'm free until I'm on UK soil." So the campaign is like, where's Latifah? What's going on? They're not hearing from her. So they decide they're going to send all these transcripts of Latifah's videos in the bathroom and everything from all those months ago. They're going to send them to the United Nations. And they also authorized BBC to air them. Additionally, in May 2021, the High Court published Princess Haya's phone, her lawyer's phone, security guard's phones, and assistant's phone had all been hacked by Pegasus.
Ah.
Yes. I was not familiar with Pegasus, but apparently it's pretty well known. There is a picture in the pictures I sent you guys that basically explains what Pegasus does. This will be in the Instagram post as well and in the YouTube video. But if one of y'all could read that, please.
What Pegasus spyware can do. It can be installed via SMS, WhatsApp, iMessage, or an unknown vulnerability. That's vague. And then it can harvest your texts, your emails, your videos and photos. It can record your phone calls. It can get into your contacts. It can get into your WhatsApp chats, which is saying something because WhatsApp is super encrypted.
Yeah.
Into your calendar. It can activate your microphone so it can literally listen to you even if your phone is just closed and sitting near you. It can activate your camera and take videos and pictures that can be harvested to whoever is on the other side, and your GPS data for your location.
That's great.
It's a thing. I read the whole article about it because, once again, abusers will put it on their wife or their girlfriend's phones and then stalk them or track them. It's not hard to do. Yeah.
The way people can do things and even think of things like this to do, it wouldn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
That's so scary.
It's when you're not a bad person, you don't think the way a bad person does, right? Me and Amanda were talking about this recently. There's people who cheat on their wives via the Notes app. They'll share the Notes app with another woman and they text through there instead of
what
through text messages or other apps.
What? Because
you can share notes, right?
Just something else for you to freak out about in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
And when I found out about it, I was like, that is so crazy. What psycho thought about that?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, of course, none of us would have thought of that because we're not liars. So we wouldn't need to hide something that intensely.
No.
It's just crazy. It's scary. Technology's scary. And wow. Anyway, and then people make it scarier.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That made me go down a fucking rabbit hole spiral for like a week.
So, okay. So basically, Princess Haya, the young wife, her lawyer, various security guards, the assistant's phones, they had all been hacked by this Pegasus software. And of course, they feel like Sheikh Mohammed was responsible for this. The man that had been helping Latifah, the man who was leading the campaign, I think his name was David, they also found out his phone had been hacked as well. And remember, he had all those WhatsApp messages. And Latifah's number also appeared to be on the leaked list of Pegasus targets. So they probably tapped her phone too. The court then ordered Sheikh Mohammed pay Princess Haya, because she's the one who started this whole civil suit, more than £550 million. This was also because they were going to get divorced. So this was the largest divorce settlement in British history. The court also ordered that Sheikh Mohammed would not be allowed to see their children due to an exorbitant degree of abuse.
Good. Hmm.
So this is a little bit of a win. The world's view of Sheikh Mohammed is finally changing. The Queen, also like the Queen, canceled Sheikh Mohammed's invitation to join her at the Royal Box at Ascot. And all of Sheikh Mohammed's assets in the UK were frozen. Travel sanctions were imposed. And it really only happened because Princess Haya was so powerful and was like, yeah, no, she's probably a really, really freaking good lawyer. And then took him to court.
Well, I hope Haya felt pretty fucking bad about what she did to Latifah.
I hope so.
Well, you said that she was a goodwill ambassador, right, to the UN?
Yeah. in the past.
So she had hookups. She knew the right people is basically what happened. And so she was able to get her story out there. And I would assume what she did to Latifah is because, once again, she was also being abused and manipulated and used as like a tool. It might have even been the only reason he married her, to be like, she's a goodwill investor and she says that Latifah's fine. She must be fine. It's just my crazy daughter, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It all seems very calculated, the way everything went down.
Yeah. These people always have a resume, like every member of the royal family. Look how distinguished they are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, they're not hearing anything from Latifah. On May 20th, 2021, a British teacher in Dubai named Cyanide Taylor posts a picture on Instagram with the caption, "Lovely evening." It showed three women at a table in a deserted mall. Next to Taylor was Princess Latifah. People in Latifah's campaign were shocked. You know, should we be relieved? She's alive, she's here. But also, there were some weird things about this photo. It appeared staged, basically. So this is the part that really reminds me about Britney Spears. There's a lot of Instagram posts that come out and they're like, when was this recorded? It seems like this is old. It seems like this is orchestrated. And so that's the vibe that a lot of people got from these photos. And these are also in the pictures I sent y'all. But there's one where they're sitting down at a little table. And all the pictures of her, I mean, this is also just my opinion, but she just looks very sad or like emotionless.
She does.
Yeah, this one, right?
Yes, that's the mall one. Yeah. So she, you know, gets this picture with this British teacher, Cyanide Taylor. Latifah's best friend, Tina, actually knew Taylor. She had been one of the few women approved to spend time with Latifah when she was imprisoned. I'm not quite sure how they had connected, but Tina was like, yeah, I know who that is. And all these other pictures start coming out over the next several months, which we'll talk about too. But the following day, the Lamorna Cove campaigners received the first of a series of letters from Neri Shan, a partner at a global law firm named Taylor Wessing, ordering them to stop advocating for Latifah. Shan said that Latifah had informed him that she now wants to live a normal, private life to the fullest extent possible, and that she was under distress by the publication of her videos. Sean also said that basically Latifah's fine now and she doesn't want any further publicity. So he's telling all of this to the campaign and to David, the people who have been helping her for the last several years.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I want to hear it from her fucking mouth. And then even then, maybe I'll believe it.
Exactly. Hai and Jahyanin were asked to sign an agreement to not speak publicly about Latifah. So this is kind of the other problem, and why there's some holes in this story is there's a lot of people who have had to sign these basically NDAs, and they were ordered to delete any evidence that Latifah had shared with them. So like any of the messages that she sent to them in WhatsApp, they were told to delete them. So they're like, you have to delete all this evidence. They're like, no, we're not going to do that. They refused to comply unless the firm could show them that Latifah was fine. Like, we need to hear this from her. We need to talk to her. And they also said, I know it's not her behind these letters. It's Daddy.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I love that they were like, it's Daddy. I love that they called him that. So the next day, Cyanide Taylor posted another photograph of Latifah sitting at a waterfront restaurant in Dubai, smiling at the camera. The caption is, lovely food at Bice Mare with Latifah earlier. And the following month, another picture came of Taylor and Latifah. This time they were at the airport. So shortly after this, the law firm Taylor Wessing issued a statement in Latifah's name. So they said, quote, I recently visited three European countries on holiday with my friend. I asked her to post a few photos online to prove to campaigners that I can travel where I want. I hope now that I can live my life in peace. End quote.
Yeah, I see you have a picture here. She's in Iceland.
Yeah, she's been traveling all over the world.
With this lady, basically.
Yeah.
She really isn't smiling in any of the photos. She looks really miserable.
No, the one of them at the at the waterfront, I'm assuming this is the waterfront restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks like someone behind the camera has a gun pointed at her.
Right. And again, all these photos will be on the Instagram and in the YouTube. But yeah, she does not look happy. So these pictures just keep getting posted. And all of these messages are being sent to the campaign of like, she's fine. They're sending all these legal things. And eventually the campaign ends. You can still go to the campaign's website, but it hasn't been updated in years. The photographs of Latifah also seemed to smooth over Sheikh Mohammed's reputation, basically. The head of the UAE's interior ministry was appointed president of Interpol. The Biden administration approved a multi-billion-dollar arms deal and pushed ahead with a $100 billion clean energy collaboration, declaring the UAE an essential partner of the United States. World leaders poured into the Dubai Expo last spring. The Emirate was selected as the host for the COP28 climate change summit. So it's like we started making these movements with Sheikh Mohammed and we're seeing who he is. And then, I don't know, it's like life back to normal. Dubai's great. The United States is using them in all these deals. And it's like nothing ever happened because Princess Latifah is fine, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Okay. So in April 2023, Heidi Blake from The New Yorker wrote to Latifah requesting to talk to her. She's looking into the story and she, like a lot of people that follow true crime, have been following Latifah's story. She's like, something does not feel right. Let me just try to talk to her myself and just see if I can write a piece about her, hear things from her perspective. So Blake then received a letter from a law firm in London refusing that request. That same day, a new account happened to appear on Instagram in the name of Latifah El Maktoum. The account posted a picture of Latifah in what appears to be Austria, posing outside of the Swarovski Crystal Worlds Park. She's dressed for the winter. She's wearing a little coat and snow boots. I don't remember if I have that picture in there. But the caption read, "I was recently made aware of media inquiries for a piece which casts doubt on my freedom. I can understand it from the outside perspective of seeing someone so outspoken fall off the grid and have others speak on her behalf, especially after everything that has happened, which appears to make me look I'm being controlled. But I am totally free and living an independent life." Blake also spoke with a nurse who served on Shamsa's handlers team for 2 years, and the nurse would claim Latifah is living in her own house now, that she drives herself around Dubai. The nurse believes that Latifah negotiated something and she's now managing her own life within agreeable boundaries. And it seems those boundaries include keeping the family business private. The nurse, like many others that Blake talked to, say that they have no idea what happened to Shamsa. So obviously there's a lot of conspiracy theories about what is going on. There's a lot of just unanswered questions and worry. Part of what's so hard to wrap my mind around with this is that Latifah had initially refused to even contemplate that her campaign would end like this. She once wrote, quote, "There will never be a conclusion where I am happy with my UAE family. Never. I want to live, exist, and die as a fully emancipated person. My soul will be happy with that. I need that. It's my destiny and the only conclusion I'll accept," end quote. So, you know, it's just, it's complicated because obviously we want her to be fine, but everything that we've seen up till now would point to her not being fine. And like we were talking about earlier, why would her abuser all of a sudden let her go?
Yeah. Drop a video, girl. Let's hear from you.
Yeah.
And you would think if she was autonomous and was moving around Dubai on her own, driving herself around, going on these vacations, other people would have also observed this and taken photos and posted videos. She's well known in Dubai. You know what I mean? She's royalty. And she also was making a fuss for literally decades. You don't think people would be having pictures of her and stuff? I mean, oh, yeah, I saw her at the mall or I saw her at the grocery store, or whatever the heck. It's just a little weird.
Yeah.
You hit the nail on the head. It is giving Britney Spears because we never ever see pictures of Britney Spears out and about.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the other thing that I guess I wanted to talk about with this is there's been a lot of talk about The Handmaid's Tale, for example, and how that doesn't happen and it's so exaggerated and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, these things are literally happening all over the world right now and will continue to happen. I don't know if you guys have heard that before, but I've heard that from a lot of people who have tried to watch Handmaid's Tale or who talk about it, not really taking these types of things to heart of like, no, this happens a lot right under our noses. And like, if this can happen to a royal family member, someone who has all this privilege and power and all these things, you know, it can happen to us. It could happen to anybody.
Well, I mean, right now in your lovely home state, they're trying to get rid of no-fault divorce.
Yeah.
That means if a woman wanted to get a divorce, she would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was being abused, which basically means your wife would not be able to leave you. It is men who don't want their wives to be able to leave them who are trying to pass these rules. And people act like, oh, it's so ridiculous, it'll never happen. They said the same thing, it'll never happen. Roe will never be overturned. The Supreme Court, its precedent has been set. Gay marriage will never be overturned. And we're literally watching them work to do it right now in our country. That's why I find it so disingenuous, too, when people use the Middle East. They say, well, the way that they treat women and the way that they treat LGBTQ people, that's why I don't feel bad for them, right? We've seen that a lot in the discussion about Palestine, Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, whatever. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you go to the country that has the money and all of a sudden we're not so worried about, that's a cultural thing. That's none of our business, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It just rings so disingenuous the way that we talk about these things. And then you will hear people say that could never happen here. That'll never happen here. It is happening here. It already happened here. We're not progressing. We are digressing or whatever. Every single day. Regressing every single day.
I was going to say, it feels we're going back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
And, you know, we're saying this from an extreme place of privilege, being three middle class white women in America, right? And then you look like this is literally someone who was born into what should have been extreme, extreme privilege. And it just goes to show you, it does not matter. If somebody powerful, a man, most of the time, wants you to be quiet, they will work tirelessly to do it.
Yes. So, obviously, we don't fully know what's going on with Princess Latifah, but I'm curious what y'all think, because that's everything that I have.
I mean, if she was good, she was very outspoken. She, you know, you said she was writing on social media. She literally made a 40-minute video. Girl, where's your video? I want to see you talking. I want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You would think that her knowing that people are thinking she's being controlled, she would come out and be like, hi, I'm not. Or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just seems off.
I think not hearing from her and not hearing from Shamsa combined definitely makes me think that there's still a lot of strings attached, that bad things are still going on, unfortunately. That's
well,
my
the
opinion.
Sister, something even worse happened to the sister, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But Latifah has done, I can't remember the dates and stuff, but like she has talked apparently about her sister and says that she's still alive and that they still talk to each other. But there haven't been more details aside from that. She has not been seen in public at all in over 20 years.
I would say best case scenario, in my opinion, she was enough of a pain in the ass that they gave her a little bit of a freedom or something that would feel like freedom compared to what she was under for traveling and money and autonomy, right? But under the agreement that she would shut the fuck up. And if she didn't shut the fuck up, it's back to the jail cell, permanent isolation, right?
Yeah.
And if that is what happened and she took that deal, if that's what you had to do, girl, no one can be mad at you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I do have a bad feeling that that is not the case and that she is not living as freely as she would like to be. But what can we do if she's saying otherwise? You know what I mean?
I know.
There's a point where I agree. I think if she or her family or whatever really want to make this go away completely, having her do an interview, put her on fucking Oprah or whatever. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Well, that's the thing, because then she could say whatever she wants, right? And then maybe if she is under control, they don't want her to just get in front of a camera and be able to just say whatever she wants.
Yeah. Be on live TV or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a very frustrating, horrifying, awful situation that is so complicated and has so many parts wrapped up in it that you almost don't know how to untangle it and think what would even be a solution, you know?
Right. It's just so frustrating legally what's happened, too. I mean, all of the different things we talked about earlier with Sheikh Mohammed having all of these young girls and teenagers at his house and his little entourage raping them and torturing them, and all of these drivers being able to tie them to that. And it's like, y'all aren't going to do anything because a lot of these not all of them. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not all of them, but you know, some of them were apparently sex workers. Like, why are we not doing anything?
Yeah.
Well, that for sure is part of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
David, the one that was spearheading the campaign, he was really heartbroken after it because he developed a bond with Latifa and was working on her campaign for 3 years and was talking to her. And then he hit a wall and he's like, there's literally nothing I can do. Like, it really messed him up mentally. And he's talked about that on interviews as well. So
that's probably also very confusing for him because like, he felt that was his friend. It wasn't just, you know, some random person he's trying to help. They communicated so often. I'm sure it felt like a friend that he was trying to get out of a horrible situation. I just can't imagine if I had a friend who was in a horrible abusive situation and then one day they just go, actually I'm fine, they've been trying to get me to help them for years to get out of it, and then one day they're like, actually I'm gonna stay here. That would be really confusing and disheartening and upsetting, especially if they have no answers as to why that's happening. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, so that is the perplexing and heartbreaking story of Princess Latifa of Dubai and Princess Shamsa, and that is the finale of Season 2. I am so thankful for each and every one of you. I'm really happy that Cassidy and Amanda came on for this too. It's like we've come full circle because y'all are the reason I started doing this. So thank you so much for listening to me tell this crazy long story.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Thank you for telling, you know, something that is still kind of like an ongoing thing that people are very confused about and want answers to. And hopefully this, because I had never heard of this story, so hopefully more people can learn about this and something can be done.
Yeah, I mean, all of this came out fairly recently. Latifa's in her late 30s at this point. She's like 38 or 39. I'm hoping that more comes out and that more is done about this. Unfortunately, there's probably a lot of women in Dubai that are still dealing with all of these things. I'm hoping she has started a trend where this can turn into something bigger and things can really get done in the UAE and in Dubai, because what an insane thing. Just all the laws and regulations here, like so many things need to change.
Yeah.
You should look up what happens to Instagram influencers and Instagram models and TikTok girls that get flown out to Dubai. Just look up the yacht parties in Dubai if you want to hear. Here's some upsetting stuff.
Oh, God.
Like, they'll fly smaller Instagram models and stuff out to Dubai, wealthy businessmen and stuff, and then sexually torture them, basically.
Oh.
I have read reports. It's something you can look up if you want to know more about it. But yeah, there's a lot of horrible treatment of people happening in that city, and I think it is because there's so much money there.
And I think that's kind of the other reason I wanted to talk about this. I really didn't know much about Dubai other than all these Instagram influencers go there and they're like, this is such a beautiful place. There's no place like it in the world. This is the ultimate influencer travel destination. And so all these people now are like, oh my gosh, it would be so cool to go to Dubai. The taxis here in Dubai, they're like Rolls Royces or something crazy expensive. Yeah. Just the wealth here is so tangible. And then you like see behind that window dressing and it's just like dystopian. It's crazy.
And it's, I mean, that's once again, money. Anytime there's significant amounts of money behind any sort of place or person, you scratch just an inch deep and there's usually something rotten down there, you know? And
yes,
it's what money does, man. That's what money does. I would like to have some money one day, but
I would too. But I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't fucking.
Not at the expense of my soul.
Yeah, wouldn't do any of this kind of shit.
No, that's for sure. Well, that's probably why we don't have the money, right?
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Thank you, though, for sharing that. It's an important story, and that's a hard one. Hard one. Yeah.
Damn.
Absolutely. And also, if anybody happens to be listening to this that lives in Dubai or lives in the UAE, I'm sure there's things that I got wrong, or you probably have a lot more context than I do. You know, like, I'm just reading from the internet. So please send me a message. Let me know if I got something wrong. I want to learn more. You will not offend me at all. And thank you so much.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, this season 2 finale. We will be back for season 3 in January. I, for the first time ever, am going to take a short hiatus. It'll be, I think, just 1 week, but maybe 2. I'll update you guys on Instagram. I just want to have a little time to rest for the holidays, get things ready for the new year. But if you enjoyed this episode, please let me know. Give this video a like. If you're listening on a podcast, I would love if you leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave a comment on this exact episode. And if you would really like to support the show, you can go check out the Perplexed Society. You can join at as little as a $1 tier. I have early and ad-free episodes. I've got tons of bonus content, over 50 episodes of bonus content at the time that I am recording this. Patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast is where you get all of that. And that's, yeah, I mean, this is the end of season 2. So also, if there's anything you want for season 3 or any guests, drop a line and let me know. And then last but certainly not least, if you guys were not already familiar, because I've had Amanda and Cassidy on the show before, their podcast is fantastic. Drinking the Kool-Aid. And
yeah, check us
you
out.
Should, yeah. if you guys like me, you'll like them. They have the comedy element too, so it lightens things up. I listen to their show every week and I genuinely enjoy it. Y'all are like one of my favorite podcasts. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week and stay safe. And I will talk to you not next week in like a week or two, but we will kick off season 3 in January. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brannon. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to support. Have a topic request or a perplexing story of your own you'd like to share? Send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show further and unlock exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Perplexity merch and additional support links can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.